Breaking the Gray.
You've done it. You've made it one full week, not to timestamp ourselves with King Charles. You have a new king in town.
Yes. God save the king.
Yeah. How are you feeling about all this? I know last time we talked, you were like, I'm off to the pub. I'm not going to show up. You've recovered. You're okay.
Yes. I mean, it's a full on drama. It's amazing how serious it is over here. And of course, we've got a new prime minister and we've got a new king in the same week. And we've got a lot of pomp and ceremony going on right now in London. It's a piece of history.
Yeah.
It's a historical time.
It is. I know. I have every single streaming service has something about the queen, her coronation, who she was. They've been prepared for this for a very long time. So there's a lot of video content to watch, but an amazing human being. And Sarah, we're glad you're here. And I'm excited for today's guest. Number one, because I always talk about personally the disgustingness that I cannot lose weight and I'm not putting the right foot forward here to get myself.
Don't forget your language, Russ. We've already had a podcast on this about negative self-talk. Well, anyway, maybe today's guest, we may get you on the right track.
Okay, good.
Super, super excited to have Ade Fox on today. And I love the mnemonic that you gave us to kind of pronounce that, like a sunny day, because of course, how wonderful it is to see you. And yes, you have brought a bit of sunshine. And you're also known as Black Carnivore and the Black Carnivore. So that kind of gives us a clue about what you're going to be talking about. And I'm super interested in this topic because we've had a lot of people who spoke about nutrition. But to like the concept of going totally carnivore or kind of changing your diet that radically, one, it goes against kind of what we've been taught up to now, certainly in conventional wisdom. And secondly, it seems difficult to me to do. And, you know, some part of me thinks, God, is that even safe to do that? So I'm very excited to have you on. I come from a whole family of vegetarians, so I'm very interested to hear what you have to say. So welcome on the show. Thank you, Ade, for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to have this conversation too. And, you know, the points that you raise are perfectly normal and natural. I mean, of course, I mean, I was always a person that wanted to do good things for my health, you know, so I sought out information from people who I thought were experts to explain how to be healthy, how to optimize your health, what are the best things to eat, what to do to lose weight and all of that. And none of that ever worked. So, you know, I got tired of beating my head against a wall, you know, trying to moderate, you know, how much donuts I had or moderate my M&Ms or any of those things. None of that worked for me. And so I really, you know, I kept looking for more information. And when I happened upon and ended up, I started a keto diet, a lot of the problems, a lot of the health problems I had significantly improved or even went disappeared altogether. And that began my interest in the human body and diet and what was happening. Now, in my former life, I was getting a PhD in anthropology. So I've always been interested in human evolution, you know, our subsistence patterns, like how we came to be who we are today. I think to a certain extent that sort of drove my interest in diving in more on the science of keto. But I really enjoyed that process and it just continued to open my eyes. Now, I started hearing about carnivore. And, you know, when I first heard about it, it was like, that's crazy. What are you talking about? You've got to have all the colors of the rainbow in your vegetables. You need to have so many servings a day. And this is required. And since I still had lingering problems that I saw other people get resolution on keto, I still felt like I need to keep looking. I haven't quite found the solution for me. So I finally decided, I mean, it took a long time, but I probably heard about carnivore in like 2007 or 2008. It wasn't called that then, but I heard about it, but I didn't actually try it until 2017. And then I decided to full on try it. And I think a lot of people come to this like, well, I'm 98% carnivore. I really only have this vegetable food. But I will say that there is a difference between being 98% and 100%. That's not to say that you have to stay at 100%, but I do a lot of coaching and I have a carnivore community, and I do like to get people to at least do the first 5 days really strict and just see how they feel, because a lot of these changes happen very quickly. I mean, you're not going to lose 100 pounds overnight. You're not going to get off your diabetes medication like instantly, but you will see some significant difference in terms of how you feel, the inflammation and all of that. And so I think it's important for people to just get a little taste of that and understand what that feels like. And then they can kind of decide where they want to go in terms of how they do carnivore. And my approach, you know, the way I talk about it is the goal is not to be like the most carnivore. There's no queen of the carnivores. There's no prize for being the best carnivore. The goal is to feel better. And you have to match the way that you're eating with whatever goal it is you're working on. So if you're fighting cancer, you're definitely going to have to be strict. You know, if you are mostly at your goal weight and you feel that you're generally pretty healthy, you probably can be more relaxed and incorporate other things. But that's on you, and you have to decide, you know, how good you want to feel. So for me, I decided I feel better when I stay more strict. To get back to my story, you know, I kind of came to it with allergies, asthma, and eczema. Those were the things that I was really struggling with at the time, and they did not get better on keto. In fact, at the time that I started carnivore, my asthma and allergies and eczema was at its absolute worst. And I ended up going to urgent care twice because I just couldn't breathe. And so, you know, I ended up going to a pulmonologist and I was diagnosed as having allergy-induced asthma, which just means I'm inflamed and my lungs is where it's coming out. And so I got started with carnivore. And when I started carnivore, I was, you know, maybe didn't have the best information. So I started out, I don't know why I thought I could only eat ground beef and butter with no salt, but that's what I ate. And I was supposed to do it. I was supposed to do it for 3 days. On day two, I felt
there are a lot of combinations there. There are a lot of combinations of butter and ground beef, but like at a certain point, you're like, I just feel greasy. I feel like I got a whole grease ball on my stomach here.
Not at all. But I think actually.
Really?
Yes.
I was going to say, I think the actual carnivore diet is really not that much more, is it, Ade? I mean, it's really just...
Yeah. Yeah. Do you mind? Because I think... Yeah. Do you mind just actually giving kind of the basic framework of carnivore? Because it's the first I've heard of it. And I'd love to kind of hear what it is in difference to keto. Is it similar to keto? Is it a whole other thing?
Well, I mean, I consider any diet that puts you in a state of ketogenesis is a keto diet. So yes, on carnivore, generally people are in ketosis. So yes, it is a keto diet. It's a variation. I like to think of us, you know, like on a spectrum, you know, you've got low carb at one end and carnivore at the other end, but we're all on that ketosis spectrum, so to speak. So generally, people say a carnivore diet is one where you're eating primarily or exclusively from the animal kingdom. So in my community, I talk about strict, moderate, and relaxed. So on strict carnivore, you're eating exclusively from the animal kingdom. So that means eggs, dairy, chicken, beef, lamb, goat, fish. If it swam, you know, walked, flew, it's dinner.
Watch out. We're going right. to, yeah, watch out. We're coming for you. Yeah. Okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'm glad that you've got at least dairy in there, because I was thinking it was just meat, but you do eggs and milk.
Yes. And I think it's important for people, a lot of times we think about variety as being important, but we think about variety as in different types of animals. I think about variety as in different types of animal product. So if you're eating muscle meat from fish, from chicken, from pork, and from beef, you're not getting a lot of variety. But if you're eating organ meat, connective tissue, bone marrow, the collagen, then you're getting much more variety, even if you're in the same animal. So, You know, that's the advice that I give people. And then you have to eat ruminant animals. A ruminant animal is a grazing animal that has a rumen. It's got four stomachs. The way it processes food is it eats grass. It gets fermented through all of these stomachs. And that form of consuming food really converts inedible plant material, inedible for humans, into a very high quality meat and fat that really can support us. Any kind of ruminant animal is, I mean, the ones that we're most commonly going to have access to are beef, lamb, and goat. But you might also have bison, elk, venison. And then I think there are others that I don't know and I don't see in the grocery store.
And I haven't heard you mention pork. Is pork not part of it?
Pork is not a ruminant animal. So pork and chickens, they have, they're monogastric animals. They have single stomach and they digest food similar to us. So they don't produce as high a quality and nutrient dense meat as do cows, lambs, and goat. Obviously, you can eat pork, people eat it, but you'll find when you start doing a carnivore diet that you're not going to feel as satisfied eating pork as you are beef. Now, the solution to that, you know, as I tell people, do surf and turf, like have your fish, but, you know, have it with a steak, have your chicken wings, but have it with a burger. But don't let a day go by where you have not had a portion of some ruminant animal because you won't feel well. And sometimes people get started on this and they're like, bacon and eggs, I love it. You know, I'm having that for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And it tastes great, but you're not going to feel good if you do that. Even in one whole day, you're going to feel more hungry and you're going to feel less satisfied and energetic. So that's kind of the strict version of carnivore. Then there are lots of people who incorporate herbs and spices, coffee, low sugar fruits like avocados and olives. And then there are people who are more relaxed, and so they'll have artificial sweeteners. If they go out to dinner, you know, they may have the side, or, you know, maybe they make a stew for the family and there's vegetables in it and they eat a little bit of that, but mostly the meat. So that kind of thing. So there is a range. And really, in biology, the way that they define a hypercarnivore is any animal that gets 70% or more of its food from animal sources. So by that definition, even clean keto is a carnivore diet. So, you know, anywhere on that spectrum, you kind of decide where you want to be. Now, for me, I had to take out dairy. Dairy is an irritant for a lot of people, and also eggs. So not everybody goes in on those. And I find that, you know, I go in and out of wanting eggs, and I'm careful about not buying them too often, eating them too often, eating too many at once, or eating too many days in a row, because I don't want to start up a more of an allergy. I mean, I've definitely gone years of my life where I couldn't eat eggs. Like, they just made me so nauseous. So now I'm, you know, I think that my gut has healed enough that I can tolerate them, but I want to be careful because I don't want to ruin that as a food because it's a great, easy, cheap carnivore meal. So, you know, I don't want that to be ruined.
Yeah. Talking about, I mean, you just mentioned it's a cheap carnivore meal. I mean, here in England, like the prices have gone up, you know, like to legitimately buy a packet of butter now, like organic butter in a supermarket here, it's £7, which is about $10. You know, to buy a big pack of butter. So from a point of view of them buying steaks or even ground beef or anything, is it a little bit elitist, do you think? Because how are people kind of financially doing a carnivore diet?
No, I don't think it's elitist at all. Yes, if you're trying to live on aged ribeyes every day for every meal, yes, you know, you have to be super rich.
I do every day.
Yeah. But generally, I eat regularly ground beef or chuck roast. You know, chuck is the next cheapest beef after ground beef. And then sprinkle in a few other things as I see them and I'm interested in them. But steak is not a regular occurrence for me. While meat is more expensive, I don't know that it's that much more expensive. You know, when I compare, when I was in my days of getting all my fresh fruits and veggies and all of that, you know, I'd look at broccoli and it was $3.89 a pound. And then I'd look at ground beef and it was $3.99 a pound. I can eat 2 pounds of ground beef for an entire day and be completely and totally satisfied and need nothing more. But if I tried to eat 2 pounds of broccoli, that's ridiculous. And as it is with broccoli, you cut off the stalk and you throw that out. That's half of the weight that you just spent.
Right.
So there's no waste with meat, and you have a lot more long-term satisfaction and no need for snacks and all this other stuff. And so it might seem like you're spending more, but at the same time, you know, you're really not, you know, snacking between meals. You're not eating any other kinds of foods. And there's a lot of medications that you can get off quite quickly. What I was saying before is that, you know, I struggled with asthma, allergies, and eczema, and I used to take Claritin all the time. I was on Benadryl around the clock for like 2 years. I took Flonase for several years, which is a steroid, and I didn't know it. I bought Sudafed all the time, Mucinex, super expensive, tons of boxes of tissues, and all of that stopped when I went carnivore. And I think, I mean, I must have probably been spending, you know, $100 a month on allergy related products. And I put that into my food budget, and that really made a big difference for me. So I think a lot of people, depending on what your condition is, you might find that it ends up being a lot cheaper, especially when you can get off medications and stuff like that. That stuff is not cheap.
I totally understand. And when you're saying like get off medications and things, I mean, which conditions do you think respond most to this kind of diet? Because like, so it is something that's definitely, you know, I mean, I have a nutrition degree and none of this was taught, you know, it was all about, you know, eating a lot of rice. And so which do you think are the main conditions that people are looking at to try this kind of diet?
So first of all, I'm not a doctor. I am an experiencer who is smart and very curious and loves science. So,
we'll put the disclaimer. This is not medical advice, but yes, we're just generally keen to have your opinion.
Yeah. But in my opinion, I think carnivore is really awesome for two things. One, the ketosis, that being in a state of ketosis is incredibly healing, and it does a lot of stuff in the body. And there's a growing body of research studies showing how effective being in ketosis is for dealing with any metabolic disease, including insulin resistance, you know, metabolic syndrome, diabetes, heart disease, high blood pressure, stroke, and that sort of thing. So anything that has to do with, you know, metabolic conditions, that is vastly improved. And then I also see carnivore really shining when it comes to any kind of autoimmune, any kind of inflammation, and also mental health stuff. And I think that really comes by because, you know, not only are you in ketosis, but you're also removing the plants that can be irritants for a lot of people. And that is like sort of a new concept for some of us. But plants are not our friends, and they don't desire to be eaten. And, you know, animals can run away. They have claws, they have fangs, whatever. They have different ways of defending themselves physically, but plants don't move. So their method of defense is all chemical. And obviously, like, insects are their major predators that they're sort of dealing with. But even the compounds that they create lots of natural insecticides and pesticides that kill their or disable or whatever, you know, their predators. But those compounds also have an impact on us. So obviously we're much bigger than bugs and we're not going to drop dead immediately, but there certainly are plants that can kill us immediately.
Well, and we have bugs in our guts too. You know, we have our own gut flora, which are essentially bacteria. So yeah, you're right. If you've got a leaf or something which has got an antibacterial in it to save the plant, then you eat that leaf. Yeah, it does make sense that it might have an impact on your gut flora.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I see is that people almost right away feel a level of mental clarity and happiness, depression lifting, or just mood sort of evening out so that you just generally feel good all the time. I also see people's inflammation come down. So arthritis, any kind of joint pain, any kind of tendonitis or anything that ends with that itis, you know, wherever that is in your body, that stuff goes away or it greatly reduces. And finding another way to deal with pain, constant chronic pain, is obviously huge. People are struggling with all kinds of pain drugs in this country. So if you can find another way to get off of that, you know, I definitely think that this is important. So those are the things that where I see it shine. And so for me, I have a ton of autoimmune stuff, and dairy was actually a real problem for me. Soon as I took that out, it was like instantly all the inflammation came down. And I haven't, since I gave up dairy, I haven't used my asthma inhaler. And my asthma was not under control before.
So just a couple of basic questions. So one is getting started on keto. The hardest part about keto is just it's A, getting started, B, getting all the crap out of your diet that you've gotten used to. And is it patterns as well as the bad foods? So changing patterns is probably one, and also getting the bad foods out. So two-part question. One is, what are the gotcha things to get out of your diet for carnivore? And then what are some tricks that you've employed to change patterns and change patterns of behavior of, you know, snacking all day or like gorging before you go to bed? Like, what are some of those things? I find those to be my most challenging things to manage.
Well, I think carnivore can be, especially strict carnivore, can be easier because a lot of times with keto, you know, you're always having to evaluate and count how many carbs you've had and look at the ingredients list and sort of make decisions. And every time you make a decision, your willpower has, you know, it's like a muscle. So every time you make a decision, you're like working that willpower. So by the end of the evening, you don't have a lot left. But if you can make the decision, okay, for 5 days, I'm going to eat beef, butter, bacon, and eggs, or beef, salt, and water, or whatever it is you want to do, you can do that and remove all that thinking about it and just experience how you feel. But, you know, I don't tell people to try to do this way of eating if you're not getting evidence that it's working. If you're not feeling better, then, you know, of course you should stop. But a lot of people are surprised how much better they feel and how quickly it happens. So I just did a 5-day challenge, and it's just, you know, with a whole bunch of people in my group. I have an online community, and it was just amazing to me how quickly people were having massive, massive improvements. I mean, not small improvements. You got to get a community that can give you that encouragement and support, and you've got to get good information. I think a lot of people decide, oh, I want to try carnivore. You know, what they do is they drop their keto additions. So they're left with sort of just eating chicken and turkey and, you know, and some fish, and you cannot do a carnivore diet like that. So a carnivore diet must be high fat, and you've got to have ruminant animals. People who try to do it any other way always end up quitting because you just don't feel good. Like, you won't feel good at all. But once you get started the right way, you have some ideas. I do try to provide support in my group with people because most people are not living in a carnivore household. So you're going to be living with people who eat. Yeah.
That's the problem. It's a bit antisocial, isn't it? I mean, because you can't really go out so much and eat something. And if you're with a family, you know, you're just sitting there with.
Well, this is what we
mince, basically just ground beef and so
no mince. But this is what
is.
Oh, mince, not mince.
Isn't that ground?
Yes, ground beef.
Yes, mince. That's what we call ground beef. Yeah, so basically, yeah, it would. It seems like a totally bizarre. You know, I think getting past that bit because it seems so bizarre. Like I say, I'm from a vegetarian household, and all my family really are mainly vegetarian. So I have another hurdle to get through, which is kind of the guilt hurdle. Because I have tried to integrate a lot more meat, but one, I can't eat farmed meat because I just can't handle the guilt of that. So I'm having to buy kind of expensive meat, and like they do venison in certain supermarkets here. So I'm kind of having this very weird diet where I'm just eating eggs and venison, ground venison. And, you know, and I can only do it when I'm on my own because it's just too bizarre for the people around me. So, you know, how do you kind of advise people who've got families, you know, to maintain that for, you know, any period of time?
Well, you know, my father is also a longtime vegetarian since, you know, he was a kid. You know, he definitely thinks I'm crazy.
Yeah.
But what can I say? I mean, I just say to people, only you have to live in your body. And if you don't like the way that you feel, it's only your responsibility to do something about it. So everybody else can have opinions, but they don't carry your pain. If you are in pain and you're suffering, you know, you just have to put that aside. Now, what I tell people who have families where, you know, people are eating different things, like I talk about finding ways to negotiate with people, like where are those things going to be kept? Can they be kept out of sight and closed? Can you extricate yourself from some of the sort of food activities that most, you know, adults sort of engage in? But I had one coaching client who, you know, she had a family, you know, pizza night and game night with the kids, you know, and her husband every Friday night, and everybody looked forward to it. And so she was kind of like, oh, what am I going to do? I can't sit there with the pizza, and I don't want to eat the pizza, and blah, blah, blah. So she skipped one or two and then went back to it and, you know, so it ate the pizza and everything and wanted to like have that connection with the kids. But then she felt so much better and functioned and operated in the family so much better on carnivore that when she went off, you know, her kids basically said, you know what, Mom, we like you better on that diet. So let's forget the pizza. We're fine with not having the pizza. We'll just do game night and we're not going to do that at all. So you might be surprised that your relationships with people in the family are going to change because you're going to feel better. You're going to have more patience. You're going to be just a different person. And people may decide they like it better and they want to support you.
Yeah, that's great observation. So people, you talk about people have kind of this short-term gain from it, but what about long-term? Has there kind of been enough studies about what happens to people if they do cut out, you know, what we think of now as a big part of food groups long-term? You know, if you're just eating meat for, you know, weeks and weeks, months and months, even years and years, what happens?
No, there are not a huge amount of studies. There was recently a study, I think from Harvard, that looked at, I don't know, I think almost, I want to say almost 10,000 people who say they follow a carnivore diet. And, you know, the improvements they had in the conditions that, you know, I described about metabolic syndrome and all of that stuff were tremendous and much more than you see with any kind of medication or, you know, prescription intervention. So these lifestyle changes alone were enough to make a huge difference. We're kind of in, what can you say, the Wild West, you know, right now. But there are definitely people in this community who've been following this way of eating 10, 15, 20 years. So it's not like someone like me who started in 2017, like spouting all of this knowledge. I mean, there are people who have been doing this much longer and who have developed some kind of wisdom about it. However, I think that, you know, I also say to people, if you're feeling ill now and you have disease now and you change the way you eat and you get better, it's very hard for me to believe that that is going to lead to worse health outcomes. Having diabetes is bad. And the end of that, we know what the end of that looks like. It looks like amputations, blindness, painful death. If you are able to make a change in the way you eat, you are no longer on medication and your blood sugars are normal and your diabetes is not progressing, why does that mean that that way of eating is unhealthy? I can't believe that it leads to more cancer. We already know that obesity and metabolic syndrome and inflammation directly causes cancer. So I don't know. I just don't understand how something that can make you better now makes you worse later. That's what I say to people. I mean, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a researcher. You know, I have my own experience studying anthropology. So I believe that this is how human beings ate until the agrarian, you know, the agricultural revolution.
See, that's interesting too, because a lot of people kind of push back on that and say, well, our ancestors, maybe they kind of foraged for nuts and berries and kind of every now and then may have killed an animal. Or do you think from your own research, that's not true?
That's not true. We hunted, we were talented hunters and we grew and became stronger. Our brains got bigger because we had dense nutrition. I mean, I'm sure you've heard about this before, but like if you look at a gorilla, you know, they're huge, but their form of digesting food is through fermentation. So they have this ginormous gut that takes all day and they've got to eat constantly in order to process enough food and calories for them to survive. You know, we don't have big stomachs like that, and we're able to go long periods without eating because we carry this battery pack on our backs called fat, and we are able to access that fat. But you have to have low insulin and not be eating a lot of carbohydrates in order to access that fat. So our energy system is very different from a frugivore or an herbivore. You know, and so, yeah, I think that we did not, you know, we may have started or evolved from primates that were herbivores, but that is not where we stayed. And that is not who we are today. And there's plenty of evidence, at least in the anthropological and biological world, showing all the different ways that we were clearly meat eaters. But I think there's definitely a story and a way of talking about naturalness, nature, connection to nature, and sort of vilifying meat and connecting it to capitalism, imperialism, and other things. And so I think that you know, it's more nuanced than that. It's more complicated. And that does not, that story doesn't help us to actually achieve health. And, you know, stories don't make you healthy. Doing the right thing for your body is what makes you healthy. And, you know, I tried vegetarian, tried vegan. Those things did not work for me. I never got better. I tried carnivore on day two of trying it. I could feel how much better I was feeling. And I continued to improve for, you know, I think it took up to 2 years. I was continuing to see improvement. So I don't know, you know, I guess I'm a scientist at heart.
2 years. Wow. That's a good, well, you've given it a good test. No one can say that you haven't kind of.
Well, I've been doing it since 2017. So, it's now been 5 years, but like by 2 years, I was still improving and getting healthier.
A couple of questions again. So one is, I would like to know some of the gotcha foods that knock you right out, which are ones that you just try to avoid. Because I think that sometimes, and then as part of that too, Sarah and I have talked to a lot of people who are really talking about supplements and pushing supplements and taking powdered forms of collagen. Like, are there things within that too we should just avoid? Are there replacements we can take? I'm traveling, I have a pack of collagen. Does that at least keep me in ketosis? Are there things there that can help me as well? Okay. I got to carry a bag of beef on the plane. I'm fine. I'm just going to say, by the way, I got a bag of ground shock. Just ignore it. It's fine. I'm going to be cooking it.
I've been traveling all summer, so I have really mastered the art of being carnivore on the road. So
it's hard. It's really hard to do.
It's not as hard as it used to be. I really have to say that. And I also moved from New York to North Carolina. So now that I'm in the South, there's like pork rinds everywhere. And that was not a thing in New York. And, you know, I spent some time in Texas and man, you know, you can just knock yourself out at the barbecue spot and you are good to go.
Oh, God, yeah. I went to the barbecue in Austin. That's more meat than I'd eaten in 2 years. I ate in that one sitting in that place in Austin.
It's good stuff.
Yep.
Yeah. But as for the collagen and the supplements and stuff, you know, meat is incredibly nutrient dense. And so people, you know, will often say, well, kale, it's so great. And it's like when you actually put the nutrient profile next to each other, kale has a lot of, what is it, vitamin A and a few specific things, but beef has some of everything. But if you're eating 2 pounds of beef in a day, you're getting all of your RDA and you're not lagging in anything. And collagen is one of those things. Like collagen holds together muscle fibers. So if you ever get brisket, you know how if you cut it the wrong way, you've got these ropes of muscle fibers. Well, those are bundled together with collagen. So you don't need to take powdered collagen. You eat brisket, you're eating a ton of collagen. You're eating any kind of meat, you're getting collagen. And perhaps that's why with carnivores, we look younger, our skin looks great, that sort of thing. You know, that's definitely a difference that people see. So, you know, I don't worry so much about the supplements. Now, you are the sunlight lady, as you say, Sarah. I grew up in New York City, and it, like I said, I just left. I was an apartment dweller. I did not get a lot of outdoor time. So coming down here, I really made it my business to sit out in the sun and be out there and try to improve my vitamin D. The vitamin D is fat soluble, and it comes in foods that are pretty common on the carnivore diet. But I think as a New York City person, I probably can't eat enough and make enough to sort of get myself caught up. So that is something, a supplement that some people do take, and you might find benefit from that. But overall, you know, supplementation is for if there is a specific deficit, and then you supplement it to resolve that. But we don't expect to be on supplements like endlessly. You know, you take it to resolve the problem, and then it's resolved. Or it's not, and you figure out, you know, something else is going on. And as far as the foods that will knock you out, so anything sweet, if it tastes sweet, it is sweet. This is what I tell people. And in the beginning, I used to think, oh, you know, salads and vegetables and oh, I miss these things. But I realized that it was the balsamic vinaigrette that I missed, which is sugar. It was the condiments and sauces, which is sugar. And all the things that I really missed were the sugar. And that's going to knock you out. The vegetables, I think for a lot of people, once you take out all the sauces and all that yummy stuff and you're just eating the vegetable, it's kind of like, you know, I could take it or leave it. But you eat like a really delicious meal. One of my favorite things to make is chuck roast. So I chop it into little cubes that are like the size of a die and I air fry it for 6 minutes or 6 to 8 minutes. And it is super cheap, super fast, totally delicious. And a chuck roast has the right fat to protein ratio. So you're going to get a lot of good fat and you're going to get good quality protein, and it's filling and it's quick and easy. So that's something I make a lot. But anything that like tastes sweet, anything that's coming, you know, that's processed, is going to, you know, that can be triggering. And a lot of people are coming to this with sugar addiction or food addiction. Not everybody has that component, but if you do have that component, trying to add things like honey or fruit or occasional sweets or artificial sweeteners is just going to keep you in that cycle of addiction and binging and purging and, you know, whatever. I always tell people, you just got to stop all of it. And then, you know, your taste buds will reset and you'll kind of break at least some of that physical addiction to that sugar.
Yeah, for sure. It would be good to leave people with kind of like your top tips for, I mean, already you've given a good overview so people can kind of make their own choice, because you're right, it's all about self-responsibility. That's what we're trying to encourage. But if people then decide, okay, I want to try this, what would be your top tips for getting started? And maybe you could just tell us, what does your day look like? I mean, what is your like breakfast, lunch and dinner? So we can kind of get our heads around what that would be to live that.
So today, well, this is a little bit more personal to me, but I have epilepsy and I have decided to, with my doctor, we've decided to wean myself off of medication that I've been using for years. Obviously, you can't stop epilepsy medication overnight because it will trigger a seizure. So as I'm coming off, I'm kind of nervous about it because this is a big deal, right? So I have been drinking buttered coffee 3 times a day. So that butter has a lot of MCT oil in it, and that will trigger you to have higher ketones. So I'm trying to keep my ketones as high as possible to protect my brain. So right now, I'm having buttered coffee more frequently. Some people do that a lot.
When you say buttered coffee, what do you mean? Like a spoon or a stick or what?
So I take about two tablespoons, a little more, a little less of butter, put it in the blender, pour the coffee on top of it, close it, blend it, and it has this incredible texture. Some people also like to put an egg yolk in that gives it a very velvety texture, and it lightens it without there being dairy if you don't want to use dairy.
And some people put coconut oil, or is that a no-no?
Some people do that too, to increase the amount of MCT oils. I don't do that. You know, I'm just kind of over coconut oil, but I'm just kind of over it. I was a keto for a couple of years. You know, I did that, you know, and I definitely feel better on animal fats. Like I just, you know, vegetable fats just don't quite do it. Anyway, so I started my morning with that. Then I had a bowl of my chuck chunks, which I talked about already. And later this afternoon, I'm probably going to have some more chuck chunks because I have not gotten tired of it. And, you know, and then we'll see for dinner. I did buy some bone broth, so I'm going to mix that with butter probably before bed and sip that. And that's it. And it's very, very filling. So it's not, there's no point where you have to be hungry. If you don't want to be hungry, you don't have to do that. Some people pair this with fasting, and that can be very powerful and effective. But, you know, I say when you first start, just eat beef every day. You got to have some, or lamb or goat, depending, you know, where you are, and get community. You can't do this on your own. There's a lot of bad information out there. And, you know, and a lot of people have to do a little troubleshooting in the beginning. And if you're, you know, just hanging out with other people who don't know what they're doing, you're not going to get that troubleshooting done. So eat beef. Get community. You can join mine. I'm at blackcarnivore.com, and there are lots of others. And, you know, and then make it simple. You know, what I love about eating this way is that cooking is a breeze. It's so fast. Grocery shopping, I'm going to one place. I'm in and out. Cleaning up the kitchen, like I'm not cooking a whole, you know, there's not all these dishes and things being used. You know, I might make a brisket or a roast, and, you know, that's just one thing you put in the oven, and several hours later, you come back and it's done. So it has made domestic life so much easier, I would have to say. So those are my tips, I guess.
That's top tips. Well, we're going to put all the links, you know, we kind of put it up so people will know where to find you. And I know I've been on your Instagram page and there's a lot of recipes on there. You know, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, salt and beef, is that it? But, you know, I think you're right. It's just for people to start to see what other people are making, get going. I mean, you clearly look fabulous. So, you know, whatever you're doing is working for you.
Thank you.
I mean, yeah. So that's great. But I mean, let's say it's something, I don't know, Russ, we could maybe do the 7-day challenge again, but yeah, let's say it's something that's super challenging for me because, you know, I think there's other layers to it, but I'm willing to try. I'm totally into the brain A-Day. So anything where I think I can enhance my brain power, that's kind of where I'm at. I've joined up your Facebook group already, so maybe we can have a go. We've actually run out of time, but there's other things I wanted to ask you because I know you specifically Black Carnivore, and I wondered whether that was something that was specific to the biology, or was it more to kind of get people of color more into the biohacking? Or maybe we just got a few minutes where you could just explain that piece. If it is relevant, maybe it's not.
Yes, it absolutely is relevant, but perhaps not in the way that you think. So growing up, I was told by medical professionals, the media, you know, everyone, that I would have obesity, diabetes, heart disease, and stroke because I am Black. And what I am trying to communicate is it is not the genetics of being Black. It is the experience of racism in the United States. And that experience actually causes more metabolic syndrome. And there was a groundbreaking study in 2018 that showed that there was a 33% increase in metabolic syndrome in middle-aged Black women who were experiencing everyday racism. So what I want Black people in this country to know that the experience and the trauma and the stress of racism actually has a physical effect in our body. Now, you pair that with poor eating and eating a lot of carbs and having not good information about nutrition, and what you get is this explosion of metabolic disease with worse outcomes than there are in the white population. So when you look at Black people with diabetes and control for income, education, and so on, in comparison to white people with diabetes, there are far more amputations in the Black community. So why is that? You know, and I would argue that it is that experience of racism in this country that increases cortisol, you know, all of the stress hormones. And when all of that goes up, your insulin resistance gets worse, your insulin levels go higher. And so all of these diseases that are impacted by insulin become much, much worse. So I think that, you know, my argument really is that racism is a public health problem. Diabetes and metabolic disease is incredibly expensive. It is bankrupting our country. And this is one aspect of it that needs to be addressed if we are going to make improvements there.
Yeah. And there's something very powerful about that. And then you also double down on the fact that you're looking at women. And Sarah and I have talked about this as well, like access to funding for research. All those things are double negatives here. And I think it's important that this is a powerful message, and it's content and it's information. And I think information is super important, especially in our day and age where we're breaking through. We don't have so-called experts, because I'm no expert, but so-called experts telling us what's wrong and right here. I think it's the fact that now, you know, you're sharing this and getting your message out there. It's so important. And it's generational, right? It's generational trauma that like carries through and through. I have a bit with my Jewish background where, you know, my grandparents reminded me of how difficult it was for us. And you kind of, you carry a little bit of that weight, but it's also a fear too, right? It's a fear of asking the doctors or going to the doctor or trusting. And so as much as we can help, we're here. We want to share all the links and make sure that we're continuing to, you know, to help your cause here, because it's super important.
Thank you so much.
It's super important. We will definitely be doing it. Like you say, 5 days doesn't seem like too much. And certainly I've got a period soon where I'm not going to be staying with family. Yeah, we can do it. We can do it, Russ. And we will report back and see how we've got on. And like I say, we'll point people to your site. So it's just really interesting to have you on. And like I say, you're a very good advocate for what you're saying.
So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. All the best. Take care.
Thank you.
The Rebel Scientist podcast is a Breaking the Gray production, hosted by Sarah Turner and Russ Eisenman. Audio production by Dave Visaya and the podcast engineers. For more information and for our biohacking shopping guide, visit rebelscientist.com. To hear more incredible Breaking the Gray production podcasts, visit breakingthegray.com. That's gray with an E, breakingthegray.com.
Breaking the Gray.